And welcome to another edition of The Buzz. We have Marty Kina and Dr. Eric Lopkin in Studio B. And Dr. Lopkin, we need to go back to Start Me Up, don't we?
We do. We really do.
Yeah, this is lame.
Well, the common man has pretty much been forgotten anyway.
There you go. So it's a great show, gentlemen and listeners out there. We have two guests. We have Iran Nazario. He is the head of the Peace Center of Connecticut. A lot of good things going on. And Marty, you would agree, and the as a person of left of center, that there's a lot of need for bringing communities together nowadays, don't you agree?
Oh, absolutely. And there's always been a movement here in Connecticut that has lost a little bit of its momentum. So I'll be anxious to hear what are the strategies that he's hoping to bring forward to kind of bring us all back together again.
And then, Mr. Kina, we have the king.
Oh,
the king.
Yep.
The king, baby.
It's like the swallows are returning to Capistrano.
Yeah, I think it's been, you know, time flies, but I would say it could have been a year since we've had Walt Hampton.
Yeah, it's not enough.
And do you know what our theme, Dr. Lopkin, is today?
What is our theme today?
Getting a second and third act. Is it possible? Which, by the way, you have a lot of input on this, Dr. Lopkin, because you are living your second act.
I'm living my second act. Yes,
that's there. You go. So my acts just lead one to another. It all blends together.
There's no intermission.
There's no intermission. But anyway, without further ado, Iran, are you there?
I am here. I'm here.
Very good. So yes, we just put you on a little bit, but we were talking. We have Mr. Kina and Dr. Lopkin in Studio B, and we're now talking to Iran Nazario from the Peace Center of Connecticut. And I didn't cue you on yet, but we were talking about, you know, especially in today's atmosphere, I think the need, people are becoming more polarized. I think the need to bring people together is more needed than ever, correct?
Absolutely. I completely agree with you, and I'm anxious to work with whoever is interested in doing so.
And do you think nowadays people are just more apt in our current environment to kind of dismiss people of unworthy for, if you will, their attention?
I want to make sure I answer the question correctly, but if people are more willing to kind of dismiss individuals as not worthy, is that what I heard?
Yeah, in other words, just basically, you know, not be as engaged as they once were, possibly.
Yeah, I think so. I think, you know, with, you know, the internet was created to kind of bring us together, and in many ways, it's actually brought us apart. We don't socialize and connect as much.
You know something, as an aside, Iran, that I think is a fantastic concept and something we'll have you on again to talk about, because I sure. think with social media, with the internet, everything else, it's been created under the guise to bring us together, but I think we've lost that interpersonal touch, haven't we?
Well, I think so. I know that there are individuals that I've come in contact with that can have a very difficult time even having a conversation over the phone or talking to you in person, but they'll send you a text message or a tweet or a chat really quickly and have no problem with doing that. So it's really interesting, the dynamic that is created.
No, it's actually even interesting. I know this sounds kind of weird, but it's actually interesting to me. I think we avoid human contact so much that I actually prefer going to the automatic checkout line, Dr. Lopkin, instead of actually dealing with a person. What do you think?
Yeah, that's actually becoming very common. In fact, they just did a study. Apparently, millennials are not having children, one, as early, and two, as often as previous generations, because they're not having interpersonal contact.
Really?
And I'm contrary to the other idea, is that I stand in line for that person that has a job because I want them to keep that job.
Well, you know, there's always Jurassic Park. There you go. No. anyway, tell us a little bit about yourself, because I find that you have a very interesting background, and I always applaud Dr. Lopkin. Wouldn't you agree that even from our days as the Business Buzz, we always applauded people that pulled themselves up from the bootstraps, didn't we?
Always. We've always been very supportive of that. We encourage people to really take control of their lives.
And Iran is an individual that did it. Can you tell a little bit about your background, sir? And how you tell us about your background, but then talk about how you, what was involved in terms of, yes, there's some negativity involved in that. How do you turn a negative situation into a positive? I think it's a great story.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. Well, I was born to a drug-dependent mom, an abusive father, and I was severely abused by the age of 4 or 5, removed from custody of my mom due to child abuse along with my siblings, placed in a foster care for a number of years, and given custody to my dad, who re-traumatized and re-exposed us to abuse again. So we were removed from his custody and placed back into foster care, and then given back to our mom, who was still a drug-dependent mom, and now she was in a gang. And so by the age of 11, I was kind of already forming a mindset of being, wanted to be in a gang and kind of...
Can I interject something? Because I think that's interesting, sure. And I'm not being rude, because I think it's fascinating. From your experience, is it interesting that your background is obviously horrific in terms of, you know, given, you know, most the average person, especially the average person, you know, we come in contact with day to day. Tell us, tell our listeners about going through that. What happens to your aspirations? What happens to your self-worth as you went through, as you go through that? Because I don't think people fully understand that, do they?
No, I think it's very hard for folks to understand the depth of torment that you go through, what you actually end up developing into. For me, I developed into this really quiet, what I would call vicious young man. So because of all,
and where does the viciousness come in? Is that a reaction to people not being affectionate or positive or loving towards you?
Yeah, well, my dad was so physically abusive, and so was my mom, that I associated pain with love, and I thought that it was actually normal to show love to other people by hurting them. So I adopted that. I thought it was the truth, and you figure that the people that are supposed to love you the most are the ones teaching you those lessons. So I adopted that that mentality and thought that that was the way I was supposed to be. So I started hurting people as early as 7 years old. Thinking that it was funny and thinking that it was me showing love, because that's the kind of love that I was being shown. So when you talk about how it changes your mentality and overall perspective on things, you really don't know any other way of behaving and any other way of affection. So that's what you do.
And you actually and went to prison, correct?
Yes. At the age of 15, I stabbed my then girlfriend 4 times and was incarcerated for assault. And continued to do that, you know, behave that way for a number of years, between the age of 15 all the way to the age of 27. I went to prison, state and federal prison, a number of times due to my violent acts and assaults and all kinds of other gang violence that I was involved in. And, you know, to me, that was my world. And I didn't know that there was something else that you could do, even though you say, oh, you're supposed to know right from wrong. There comes a point where your education is what you think is right, and you actually have a hard time separating yourself from those actions and those behaviors because you're creating those in your mind. And for me, that was where I felt the safest. That's where I felt the most protected, and I had a skill set that was saving my life, which was violence. And I had a very quick tendency to go from 0 to 100 to protect all that other stuff that I was dealing with, and I didn't know how to handle it.
This is interesting. Dr. Lopkin, I think that I'm going to be a little untraditional now. I think this conversation is totally amazing, correct?
It really is.
No, this is amazing. And, Rand, I have to say this. We have a guest coming on at 4:15. But I think your story, Dr. Lopkin, you'll have to agree with me, is so powerful. Would it be okay if you rejoined us at 20 of? No, I because
it's perfectly connected.
Yeah. This is amazing. Okay, this is a story that has to be told. And before we let you go, because I'm going to let you go now, I want you to do a little bit of promotion about your event in April, and you are going to rejoin us at 20 of. I appreciate your flexibility, because I think this is that important, correct, Dr. Lotkin?
Yes, it is.
This is really important, sir.
Because our theme is about reframing, you know, your second and third act, and you've already done that. So after you listen to Walt, you might be able to comment on some of the things that he's said and maybe put some sort of personal spin on it.
Yeah, because I would be guilty of giving you short shift. I can't do that. This is so good. So talk about your event in April, and then you will join us at 20 of, correct, sir?
Yes, sir. Thank you.
Okay, so tell us about your event first before we let you go.
We are having our first annual Peace Hero Awards on April 19th at the Pond House in Hartford, West Hartford, Connecticut. And it's to honor three peace heroes across the state of Connecticut who are giving everything they have to peace, and two national heroes who are doing the same. It's our first event. It's a fundraiser, and it's really to honor those who are about peace. And
to say the location and date once again so everyone gets it.
Sure. Absolutely. April 19th at the Pond House in West Hartford, Connecticut.
Which is Elizabeth Park.
Awards, and it starts at 5 p.m. You can learn more about it as we make the event live tonight on Eventbrite, Facebook, and our website.
Okay. We're going to be rejoined at 20 of by Aran Nazario. He's the president of the Peace Center of Connecticut. I appreciate your flexibility. And we will rejoin you at 20 of, correct, sir?
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. I had to do that, Dr. Lopkin.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It falls within the framework of the theme today.
But beyond the theme, this is a story that
our listeners need to know, you know, what turned him around. I mean, going through all of that to where he is now, we need to hear the rest of that story.
We need to hear the rest of the story without any question. And I agree with you. I'm not giving any short shift, Marty, that after we talk to Walt about second and third acts, how much better of a second or third act can you have than this?
Absolutely. Yep.
You know? And the other thing is, you know something? If you have all these support structures and you break a window and you're, you know, whatever, I'm not going to name a community. There's so many things that, you know, support networks are going to help you out. You know, when you're looking to listen to Iran and what he's – there was no support, I would imagine, Dr. Lopkin.
No, it doesn't sound like he got any support.
Yeah, so he essentially did what we all talk about, pull yourself up by the bootstraps, and he made it happen.
That's it. I mean, the foster care system, unfortunately, is so overwhelmed. It's broken. You know, you've got good people in the system trying to help these kids, but they don't have the resources.
Right. And there's so many kids that in many of these homes, there are numerous kids.
Right.
So to give that one-to-one guidance, you know, is a challenge in itself. The fact that they're in a safe environment is probably number one. But to give them the kind of guidance and structure and the kinds of life skills that you would hope that a foster family would provide many times can't be done.
That's assuming he got into a foster family.
True.
If he spent the time in a group home, he's not even in a safe environment.
No, it's not a safe environment. And you talk about spending resources in terms of, you know, neglect. You know, we spend it on all these different, you know, basically boondoggles, some of it, right?
Yep.
And then you have your most vulnerable part of the population. It's like you're on your own. How does that reflect on our society, Marty?
Well, it's poorly because, in a sense, a lot of these folks that are doing it, this is their business, too. So there's some people who don't have the emotional connection to helping the children. It's just basically a financial gain for them. They get their check and move on.
Yeah, I find that very, very interesting. Also, I think we need to explore, Dr. Lopkin, the mindset. People blame, let's say they call them urban thugs or whatever, but, you know, put yourself in their shoes. You got nothing going on.
Right.
You got people abusing. You got, you know, all this violence in your life. I think 99. Go ahead.
When that's all you're exposed to, you don't know there's another way.
Exactly.
You actually have to find that or have somebody introduce it to you.
Which is what he said about what love is.
You know,
he was told that love was pain, you know, so I was creating that. I find that unbelievably fascinating that people would even be put back in that situation. Now, where was the system that they would never have vetted? What's the situation back at the house where they would have put him back in there?
Well, we have the king.
Oh.
Walt Hampton.
We've not had a Robin sighting, but we have a Walt Hampton sighting.
There you go. It's been about a year. Walt Hampton, welcome to the Buzz.
It has been way too long. It's so nice to be back on the Buzz.
Awesome. I'm glad you're here. I don't know if you heard our first guest, but the theme with you and our audience is going to be second and third acts. We just talked to an individual that basically grew up as, you know, on the streets, violent, prison, and now he's running a community center that actually helps people. If that's not the definition of a second or third act, I don't know what is. But yes, it is. I think he's an amazing man, and he's going to be rejoining us. So, second and third acts, a theme, ladies and gentlemen, and it's a theme that I think is very powerful, and Walt concurs on this, is second and third acts. How does that happen? How do you, first of all, how do you envision your second and third act, and how do you make it more of a reality? Maybe you can talk a little bit about that, Walt. Maybe in your own practice that you've maybe, or your own life, you've experienced that. Because one thing I like about Walt, among other things, is he doesn't use the age excuse. Oh, I'm 40. Oh, I did this already. Blah, blah, blah. Like Dr. Lopkin, how old were you when you started your new venture or your current venture?
I was in my late 30s.
Yeah, okay, you could have easily said, you know, I got to go the path and blah, blah, blah. So, Walt, tell us about second and third acts.
So Charles, I love that, doctor. Charles Flint launched IBM at 61.
Yep.
Harlan Sanders launched Kentucky Fried Chicken at 65. Bernie Marcus co-founded Home Depot at age 50. And one of my favorites is Sylvia Lieberman, who launched her children's entrepreneurship around her books at age 90.
Wow.
Mm-hmm.
So second and third acts. I mean, it's all this unfolding of this magnificent gift that is our lives. We get to constantly recreate and reiterate who we are.
One thing, Walt, that interests me, and you're more than anyone who qualified to answer this, I believe. Sometimes we use things like age or situation or whatever, the list can be endless, as an excuse for inaction, don't we?
Oh, all the time. All the time. That refrain, I'm too old, it's too late, I don't have enough certifications, I don't have enough education.
It's going to be too hard.
Experience. Yes. And here's what's interesting, Jeff. I hear this a lot in my work as an executive coach. I hear this question, yes, I would like to, but I don't know how to. And what's true of most of the people I work with, I suspect it's true of most of your listeners, is if they look back on their lives and look at all that they've accomplished, they never asked the how-to question. Because when we want to do something, when we really, really want to do something, we do it. And we figure out the how along the way.
And isn't it a matter, Walt, this is Marty, of questioning yourself, which is not something that's very easily done, where your goal might be this, and yet you are so sure that it's going to happen and that should happen that you don't question the other side, whether it's, you know, profitable or what, you know, what's going to happen. You know, the questioning of yourself as you move forward is probably a difficult thing. What do you think about that?
I think you're absolutely onto something there, Marty, because what happens, of course, along the way, and, you know, in my trained profession of being a trial lawyer, we look at risk. You know, we start looking at the risk of doing something, what might go wrong, why it won't work. And the truth, Marty, you know, is that none of us are getting out of this thing called life alive.
Yep.
Well, do you know what? Can I interject something? Because I've always thought this, Walt, that, you know, and please comment on this. I've thought this for years, is that when you're laying in your deathbed, okay, in an old age, and hopefully you lived a long, long life, all those little obstacles, all those impediments, all those fears, because fear is the big thing that cripples us, are going to seem just nonsensical.
Oh, no question. And there have been studies done by this, you know, the regrets of the dying. It's, you know, it's not, no one wishes that they had spent more time in the office or updated their status more frequently or, you know, not done the things that were in the deepest recesses of their hearts. It's those things that they did not do that will become those regrets.
Exactly. I believe in the quote, the crimes of omission are worse than the crimes of failure.
No question.
Absolutely.
And a lot of go ahead, Eric.
People always, you know, regret the risks they didn't take. But taking that risk really means, you know, for most people, getting out of your comfort zone. So how do you encourage people to take that leap?
Well, I believe it. Again, I think it comes back to the want to question. Because when we really want to do something, we do it. And I think the bigger challenge often, I know it is for a lot of the people that I work with, is because we get caught in the weeds of our lives. You know, we get caught up with responsibilities. We get caught up with the heaviness of life. We lose touch with those deepest callings of our heart. We actually lose touch with what we once really wanted and what we still really want. And I think one of the first steps is to get back in touch again with what that call is of your heart, so that you can begin to follow it again.
Before I throw it out to Marty, obviously it becomes increasingly difficult, because I just think that life's experiences, good, bad, just kind of sometimes numbs you. It's just so complicated that it's so hard to connect, even with social, especially with social media. It's just hard to connect with that core you're talking about, Walt, isn't it?
Oh, well, it's even more pernicious than that, I think, Jeff. We are moving at such a high rate. We have so much coming at us that we have lost the capacity to be still, to connect again, not only connect again with one another, but at a much more fundamental level, to connect with ourselves, to connect with those deepest longings of our hearts. Mm-hmm. There's just way too much coming at us.
And that's really sort of the movement of mindfulness right now, isn't it, Walt? Where a lot of people are spending a lot more time, at least talking about it, trying yoga for the first time, trying meditation for the first time, because perhaps the more traditional methodologies didn't work for them. And so something that they may have poo-pooed for almost decades now, they're now discovering will help them with some of this stress management.
I think that a mindfulness meditation practice, a simple breath meditation practice, is perhaps one of the most powerful practices that there is to connect again with what really matters. When I teach mindfulness and meditation, I use the metaphor of the holiday snow globe that you shake up and the flakes are going everywhere, and you set it down on the table, and over a few minutes' time, the flakes settle down and the water gets clear again. And that's the gift of a meditation practice over time.
Yep, and that's what's working directly. Well, you know, it's physiological in a lot of ways. You know, our stress hormone systems are, if they're not challenged and we're not going to be dealing with them, the more we challenge them and get to know them, it might enable you to help handle that stress a little bit more.
Absolutely.
You know, one of the things with mindfulness also is that it allows you to break the pattern. We all get into such ruts going, oh, well, I have to do this, I have to do that. And it really does keep you from what you were talking about, connecting with your core and going from what you have to do to what you want to do.
Yes, that's beautiful. It's absolutely true.
Yep. Lopkin's a beautiful guy. Anyway, the other thing I think that, what do you think of this? I heard this from Tony Robbins, and maybe you can comment on this. I think it's really fascinating. And what he said was that if you don't take these chances, you live in a little cocoon, that getting a scratch on your car could send you into, like, a rest home. But the more things you try, the more your universe expands, and therefore things that used to rattle your cage are like, okay, I can deal with this. Comment on that. So it's almost like a false sense of security when you say, oh, I can't do that. But really, when you expand your universe, things that were once, you know, threatening become, okay, I can do that. Comment on that, Walt.
Well, you know, I, as you know, one of my passions is high altitude mountaineering. And at age 60 this year, I'm going to be doing the fifth of my 7 summits in the world. And, you know, one of the things I know from mountaineering is that when you push the comfort zone, the things that once bothered me, the little small bothers of working around a house, or the problems of too much rain or too much snow falling in New England, they start to pale against, you know, minus 40, minus 50, 50 degrees, snow slopes, 8-day storms that are 100 mile an hour. So I think you're onto something, Jeff. You know, as we expand our awareness of what the world is, what the experiences of the world are, I think we become less petty. I think, you know, I remember back when I was raising my boys and took them down to Cusco, Peru to walk the Inca Trail. We saw poverty there that they never see in the United States. And coming back, realizing what gifts they had living in suburban Hartford, Connecticut. So I think the more we expand our experiences, the more we see the world, the more we push beyond our comfort zones, and the less petty we become.
Absolutely true. Then, Walt, as people do expand their lives like that, isn't it also true, not only do things get easier to deal with because you're being exposed to so much, but the opportunities come more because, you know, the more you expand, the more you're open to what's out there.
One of the practices, I love that, one of the practices that I've trained myself to do over the years is the very first thing, when my eyes snap open in the morning, the very first question that I ask is, what amazing opportunities will I see today? And what we focus on, we see. You know, if you've had the experience of going out and shopping for a car, maybe it's a black Volvo, and maybe you've test driven it, maybe you put the deposit on it, and then you're out to the grocery store on Saturday morning and you see that car everywhere. It's like everyone's got your car.
Yep,
because
yep.
That's where your focus is.
Yep.
What we focus on, we see. When we focus on what's not working in our lives, more of not what's not working shows up. When we focus on what's working, when we focus on what's possible, when we focus on opportunities, those things show up much more frequently in our lives.
And hopefully this isn't the first setback that people are dealing with. You know, hopefully at this age you've had several setbacks as you've moved forward, or you really haven't had a challenging life. I think you're going to be much more fulfilled if you can, you know, work through several things. But as you're at your current situation, wouldn't it be a good idea to remember that you've come back before, that you've done this before, that you've been successful before, and that, you know, let's not allow this to overwhelm you, that, you know, you've been able to find strategies to pull yourself together, and, you know, let's remember our comebacks.
And doesn't it go, hold on for real quick, I like that question, Marty, but doesn't really, in order to have that scenario be realistic, you can't be the person in the cocoon because you can't draw on those strategies or those past experience because you haven't done it. Correct, Walt?
Yeah, yes, and I loved the question as well. My own coach asked me years ago as I was pivoting from being a trial lawyer to working in personal and professional development as an executive coach. She said, you know, if you were this successful in work that didn't make your heart sing, think about how successful you could be in work that did.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so the support of others, you know, I think a lot of resilience factors, you know, come into play when, you know, you might feel supported and you're starting to feel better, but I think there's been some studies, Walt, let me know if I'm wrong on this, that you might even get even a bigger boost when you help other people. And then when you're helping other people and you're getting validated from them, things work out for just about everybody.
Yeah, the great Zig Ziglar said, you'll get everything you want in life if you help enough other people get what you want.
I love Zig Ziglar. He was excellent.
What they want, yeah. Yep.
Dr. Lopkin.
Yeah. So, What advice would you give our listeners who are taking that first step out of the cocoon? You know, how can they break through for the first time?
That's a tough question.
It is.
And another thing is, Walt, maybe the first step, maybe surrounding. Here's what I think. One of the things that Walt said, I know last time he was on or the time before, is if you look at where someone is, you can just look at their 5 best friends.
Yes.
In other words, and I think, Walt, maybe that's the key. If you're not getting anywhere, maybe you should look at the people, the company you're keeping.
Yeah, positive.
Yes.
Is that maybe one of the factors, Walt?
Yeah, you know, part of the problem with our comfort zones is that they're called comfort zones because they're pretty damn comfy even when we're unhappy. And we tend to survive, we tend to be the average of the 5 people that we hang out with most, average in terms of what we're doing, what we make, where we live, what we drive, what we aspire toward. And you're right, you know, when we want more, it's not to cast aside the people that are important to us, but if we want more, if we aspire to more, we need to surround ourselves with other people who are on that journey to help lift us up and support us.
And doesn't it happen, because I've seen this before, that even some people that you may consider your dear, great friends, they, you know, say, hey, I want to do this. I want to climb Mount Everest. I want to be blah, 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 whatever. You think sometimes they're threatened by you leaving the nest, and maybe that can have dire consequences for your journey forward, can't it, Walt?
It does all of the time, because people will say, who are you to step up? Who are you to step out? You know, and the great Marianne Williamson would say to that, who are you not to? That is your divine call to step up and to step out and to shine.
Yeah, but then doesn't it threaten other people you're surrounding, let's say posse, that when they're looking at you and you're going to be ascending or at least attempting, doesn't it threaten their own psyche? Because I'm not doing it, but look at Bob, look at John, look at Fred, look at Nancy, they're doing it. Doesn't it threaten them to some degree?
Absolutely. And if we believe in that call of our heart to live a big life, then we have an obligation to answer that call.
Do they call that counterfactual thinking, Walt? I think I read something somewhere that even as early as the age of 7, we start to develop this concept, this ability to, you know, imagine what might have been, and this is what you carry your whole life, you know, and it starts so young.
Well, and that, of course, can always lead to regret if we're not living out what might have been.
Yep, and that's what we started with today, Eric.
That's it. And, I mean, it's not even, you know, what might have been. I think people really need to switch that around from what might have been to what can be.
I think that's very powerful.
Optimism.
It's so easy to say woulda, coulda, shoulda. Hey, you're still alive.
You still can, right.
Let's kick this into gear.
Unless you're lying in your coffin, there's still time.
Do you agree? What do you think of that comment?
I think every day is the opportunity to begin again, to create again, to fashion something new again. I think we always have the opportunity to do that. And one of you earlier said, you know, about taking steps in that direction. It doesn't have to be whole. If you want a new chapter, if you want a second or third iteration of who you are and how you express yourself in the world, it doesn't mean you have to throw everything out that you've been doing and start something brand new from scratch. You know, the terms side hustle is in the vernacular right now. You know, taking small steps in the direction of your dreams is often the most prudent way to start down that path.
Fantastic. Well, now, before we let you go, and by the way, we can't do this anyway. You got to come on a lot more often. I know you're a busy guy, and you have a lot of people that depend on you. But if kind of wrapping this up, two questions I have for you. If you were going to give just general advice for one of our listeners out there that's thinking, I want a second chapter, I want a third chapter, what are some of the real salient points that you might give him or her?
Number one, get still. And decide what it is that you really, really want. Listen to that call of your heart. Get off the rat race. Get out of the weeds. Get still enough to listen to what it is that you really want. Number two, take small steps. It's never the size of the step. It's the consistency of the action that leads to the magnificent results.
Fantastic. I like that a lot. And for our listeners out there that would like to get more information on you and what you can do for them, and also your books in the closing moments. Let's give that information out, Walt.
Oh, you're so kind, and it's not the reason I come. I just enjoy being with you and able to share these great ideas. WaltHampton.com is my website, WaltHampton.com. My first book, Journeys on the Edge, Living a Life That Matters, speaks to a lot of these issues that we've talked about today, available on the website and on Amazon, WaltHampton.com. So grateful for this time to share with you.
We look forward to it.
Great. Thank you very much, Walt Hampton, the king. You got to be, come on, let's do this thing maybe in a month or something.
Yes.
This is crazy.
When are you planning on your mountain climb?
We're going to Karstens Pyramid in Papua New Guinea, the highest on the Austro-New Zealand continent, a 16,000-foot technical rock climb. Will be the fifth of our seven summits.
Wow.
Thank you. Walt Hampton, the king, will be talking soon, I hope.
Take good care, guys.
Take care.
Take it easy.
And once again, you know, Walt's come through for us and for our listeners, and that's why WESU and the Buzz in particular, I have to say, is a unique proposition. Correct, Dr. Lopkin?
Oh, it really is.
I mean, where are you going to get this on, like, you know, WTIC? You're going to be hearing some meat and potato. Either it's like, you know, Trump's the greatest or, you know, he's the worst or yeah, whatever. It's ridiculous.
What Walt was saying, though, is things that our listeners can now go and actually implement in their own lives. It's not, you know, theoretical. They can actually benefit from this.
And I like that. And you know something about what I like about Walt is you can be therapists and talk about, you know, why you weren't breastfed and all that. In the end, where does it really get you, Dr. Lopkin?
Oh, it doesn't get you anything.
No, you need action because no one's going to give you extra points, Marty, because you're more at peace with blah, blah. It's all good, but you know something? You need to live a life, and you need someone like Walt to help you sometimes make that first step.
So you can lay your head down at night and know you've had a full and fulfilling day, and then you're working towards a full and fulfilling life.
And I like what Lombardi says. He's like, there's nothing better, win or lose, when you lay down on the field and you know you've given it your all. And you know something, I believe that for my own life, and I think it's true for our listeners. Even if you fail, I'm not talking fail you're screwing around and you gave it a half-ass effort, but if you really, really tried, and even if it didn't work out, I think it's a lot better when you look yourself in the mirror than saying, well, you know, I didn't really have the time, or I was too tired, or you know.
No, I would much rather look back and say, I gave that my best shot and it didn't work, than, oh, I never got around to it.
Yeah, or yeah, you know? So many more important things like, you know, watching The View.
Right.
By the way, is that unwatchable or what?
I don't know. I never watched it.
I see the clips on these shows. It's just brutal. So, yes, I'm really looking forward to Iran joining us.
Yep.
And I think, Marty, I did the right call in terms of he needed to come back.
Yes. Well, hopefully you listened to the show and had a chance to hear what Walt was saying so that we can make some particular
connections. Yeah, it's Iran Nazario, and he is the president and CEO of the Peace Center of Connecticut. And I know they have a big event coming up in the not-too-distant future, so we'll talk about that. Yep. But, you know, let's look at this, Marty. If you were an inner-city kid and you could talk to someone that, you know, is theoretical. Yeah, that's really great. That in 5 cents will get you a cup of coffee.
Right.
But then you're dealing with someone like Iran Nazario. Yep. I mean, that can really have an impact on you.
I think anybody that brings a personal perspective to the story.
I mean, he's lived it.
But it also lets the people who are listening to him, as we just discussed with Walt, know that they're not alone.
Right.
That path.
I like that, Marty. They're not alone. If you talk to someone like you and I and, oh, yes, Johnny, yes, right. Nancy, you can do it. Yep. They're looking like, yeah, buddy. I mean, you know, what are you, the biggest hurdle you've had is what, changing a tire?
Yep.
I mean, come on. Don't you think there's a lot to be said for that, Dr. Lopkin?
Absolutely. When you're communicating with someone who's actually been there, who's done what they're telling you about.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And maybe how about someone that's been maybe to prison and saying it's over, dude.
It's much more impactful. Because, again, you're not listening to somebody who's talking theory. Like, oh, sure, you can do it. It's like, no, you're talking to somebody who went through what you went through and did it. And
exactly.
Now they're telling you, yes, you can do it too because I'm proof.
And how much courage, Marty, would it take for a gentleman like Iran to do what he did? I mean, you and I face challenges, Dr. Lopkin face, but, I mean, you're talking prison, and now you've completely not only transformed your life, but transformed other people's life. That's quite a story, my friend.
It goes right back to what we were saying with Walt, that oftentimes when you're helping other people, you get more out of it than what perhaps other people did for you. But let me go back again to, like, walking in our shoes kind of thing, because that happens, that kind of outreach happens in lots of different businesses. I know in the NBA, when they have their rookies come together, they bring back guys that have been through it, maybe somebody that's been in trouble, somebody who's lost their money, somebody who hasn't been
Do you know what percentage of NFL players, it's like 80% go bankrupt 5 years out of the league.
That 30 for 30 show, that was all amazing. About that. I couldn't believe 90% of those people were broke.
The best story was some defensive lineman, who cares, and he had $35,000 in the bank, What he did is he drove by a, what is it called, a Hummer store and paid for it in cash.
Oh, jeez.
Oh, my God.
No, but it, I mean, it really is. Learning from experience is fantastic, whether it's yours or someone else's.
Yep.
You know, rather than just, well, this is theoretical, you go, yes, we did it, this is how we did it, and you can do it too.
Right. And you have to, hopefully the listener is taking that chip off their shoulder, because I've, you know, in education, you could have this opportunity many, many times to talk to kids that, you know, you might be able to help with these kinds of stories, because, you know, one of the reasons why we went into education in the first place was for those moments.
Agreed.
And if they've got a chip on their shoulder and they're not willing to listen, believe me, they're still listening, because years later, they'll come back and say to you, well, you were right about that.
So we do have, and this is, I think it was a really good call, gentlemen, to have, I mean, a decision, I should say, to have Iran Nazario. He's a CEO, president of the Peace Center of Connecticut, and we have to welcome him back to the buzz.
Yep.
Welcome back, Iran.
Thank you. Thanks for calling back.
Yes. We're going to talk a little bit more about your organization, but I need to ask a question. When you were in your lowest moment, I assume prison might have been one of them. How did you possibly, because, you know, we all go through things and many times, you know, you think it's insurmountable. How did you ever think that it wasn't over?
You know, I didn't think it was over because I had become so familiar with that environment that you didn't know what over was. I don't know if that makes sense, because
you may have to explain that to us.
This was my condition. This was my situation. So prison and what came with it was just another day in my life. It was another day in my experience. And in my brain, in my world, that was my
experience. But how do you dream about something else in this crappy existence? I mean, you could have stayed there forever. You would have been another statistic. You wouldn't have helped anyone. And we would never know about you. You'd never be on the show. How did you go from point A, which is pretty crappy, I'm sorry, to where you are now, to even to envision something like that?
Well, this is where it all came to head. I witnessed a very violent episode against someone else in a different gang than the one I was in. And to be quite honest with you, it may sound kind of corny, but something was happening to that person, and that person and I kind of caught almost eye-to-eye contact with one another in their situation. And something about that situation made me realize that where I was headed, where my life was going, was hurting someone in the same way that I was hurting myself, or that people were hurting me. Something about that moment said to me, am I really ready to be this evil and this unforgiving? And something about that moment said, no. Something about that moment said to me, I can't do this any longer. I can't hurt people anymore. And it wasn't that simple as, oh, well, the next day I was on my feet feeling happy and joyous. But it was that
it one started the process.
It started the process of saying, am I really that cruel? And I didn't, the first time I ever questioned, what the heck am I doing? Mm. Like, after all those times of going to jail, all those times of being involved on the streets, homelessness, you name it, nothing within me ever said, what are you doing, until that moment? And then, just by the blessings of whatever the earth is providing to me, I happened to, maybe a week or two later, while I'm questioning where I'm at, run into a professor of a university who offered me a job doing passing out flyers, okay? And as insignificant as that might seem to someone, it was a moment in time where he said, I'll give you $15 an hour.
He believed in you.
Flyers. And I didn't believe in him. I didn't believe in myself. But I was down. I was pretty much homeless. I had nothing to live on. And the $15 an hour was that one thing that I could grasp onto. I didn't have skills or anything else. I didn't have my ISO diploma or anything else. But I had that one thing to hold on to. And I made the decision to contact this person, as rough as I was around the edges, to figure out what this was about. And then eventually I saw a different opportunity. I saw a light, right? Like an opportunity to look at something different. Don't get me wrong. It took me a very long time to understand not challenging that process. you know, being held responsible, accountability, having projects that people were assigning to you, being a leader, being ready to forgive. All of that stuff took so many years because I didn't know that process. But at least I had found in that opportunity and in an opportunity for me to look at something new, something different that took me out of that comfort zone and put me into a new world. And I think that's what started all of this.
And that was your first opportunity where you saw there was something you could do other than the violence, other than the circle you were in.
Right. It was an opportunity for me to not only do something different, but to change the conversation. I mean, when you have to understand that from the age of about four, you know, when I was a five, when I was removed for child abuse, all the way through almost 30 years of age, right? You're immersed in this craziness of a lifestyle. So you become kind of conditioned to it and addicted to it and dependent on it. And every skill set you learn is to survive in that world. When you finally realize, what am I doing? You don't know what to do next. So it's important that someone's there that knows what to do in that other world. So now you can develop new tracks in your brain, new responsibilities, new abilities that you didn't realize you had. So that was that moment. And then, you know, I started to really believe in my voice, and I started seeing that there were other guys in the gang and on the street that was desperately looking for an out but didn't know what to do. And I just said, follow me. I don't know what I'm doing, but this seems different. Let's give it a try.
Yep.
And let's see what happens.
That was kind of like
where I am today.
The question that I was going to ask you, because it was always been my understanding that once you were part of the gang, you were part of the gang. So how was it that you were able to break that bond so that they weren't continually holding you back?
Isn't that kind of a lifetime membership?
Yeah. Well, they were kind of holding you back there, yeah, and exactly. Then they could continue to do so.
So how'd you do that? That's a good question. How'd you break those, because they don't really take kindly to leaving, do they? It's really not a two-way pass, is it?
Right. They don't take kindly to leaving, but I can tell you that one of the greatest misconceptions of gang membership is that you can't leave. And I know hundreds and hundreds of guys that have left the gang without injury and without being killed or obviously and all that other stuff. But this is how I was able to break out. I climbed the ranks in the gang, and I got to the highest level that you can be in that gang I was in. And by that time, I had already in my brain decided that I was going to do something different. So I took the opportunity while being a leader to implement some things that I felt would save my brothers and sisters, because I just couldn't see harming them because they wanted to get out of something that was harming them. You know, that I couldn't make those two things connect. So I instituted what we call walking papers in the gang, where you had three reasons you can get out. One is if you were ill, sick, you couldn't contribute to the gang, that kind of thing. Second, and it's going to seem kind of weird, but for religious purposes, if you found the Lord or you found whatever it is that your calling was, and you were going to be about that life and do what that was about, you were allowed to leave. And then third, if you had committed enough to the gang and had changed your life and doing a public service, the gang will give you the right to walk out. So I was given the right to walk out in 2000 by the what we call the godfather of the organization. Said, this guy has changed his life. He's doing different things. And you know what? Let him go about his business and do what it is. Now, not to say there weren't people who were really upset and didn't care and said, let's go get him anyway. But what I was able to do after I was out by working to help young people, I was finding myself providing services to those very same guys who wanted me hurt. Their children needed help.
I got it.
I always say that need is going to outweigh purpose many times. And in this case, they had a purpose. They wanted to hurt me, but the need of their own children needing help was greater than their anger towards me. So the year after year, I was helping these kids of these guys that didn't want the cycle to repeat itself. And eventually they just saw me as this guy that does youth work.
Excellent. Now, we only have a couple minutes, literally.
Sure.
So I just need to ask you two quick questions and try to be as concise as possible because we only literally have a couple minutes. You have on your website, you say you have counseled, you know, over, you know, thousands of youth, and you have an 80% success rate. How does that happen?
Or how's it measured?
Well, not even measure it. What's the secret? How does so many people fail? How do you succeed where others fail?
Well, the way I succeeded quickly was being as consistent as possible and to be there to interrupt whatever it was that these young people were going to do at the right time. I was consistent. I never gave up. I followed them at all hours of the day, and that's what led to the success rate that you see and you hear about.
Fantastic. Now, the other question is, you have a big event coming up. Our listeners need to know what that's all about. Please tell us.
So the Peace Hero Awards is on April 19th at the Pond House in West Hartford, Connecticut, and it's really a ceremony and a celebration of those that contribute and dedicate their lives to peace. We're honoring three Connecticut folks and two national folks just for their dedication and purpose to peace. It is our fundraiser, and we're hoping that it can support the programming and operations here at the Peace Center.
Okay, and now if our listeners would like to become, let's say, active members of the Peace Center, how do they get in contact with the center or with you?
Okay, so me directly, 860-922-3552.
922-3552. Excellent.
And they can also go to our website, www.peacecenterofct.org. And if they want to email me, my email is on there. But the email is peacecenterofconnecticut, all spelled out, @gmail.com.
Irene Nazario, thank you so much for being on Buzz. You can't be a stranger. We're going to have you on right before the event so you can promote it, and we're going to have you after the event. You're a very special guest of the Buzz.
Thank you, my friend. Thank you very much for what you're doing, and I wish you the best.
Continued success.
Thank you very much. Fantastic show, gentlemen.
Wow.
And a fantastic
Amazing.
Two excellent guests. And now we just have to go to one news item and then go to buzzwords.
I had a variety, but, we just talked about gangs. And this time of year, there's a huge carnival down in Rio de Janeiro, and they've certainly have had their issues economically since the Olympics.
Yes.
And the gang warfare actually broke out during the huge samba fest that they were having down there, and they were unable to control the crowd. There was attacks and robberies, and they were shutting down the mass transit. And this was with 17,000 police already there. So,
one more quick news item, Marty.
Okay. Well, unfortunately, there has been a tremendous ghostly pollution spill, oil spill out in the East China Sea. It may sound something that is not connecting to us, but not like previous oil spills that the globulates can be vacuumed. This particular form of oil is not to be seen. It's highly toxic and could be very,
what we've
very
done
difficult.
To this, the stewardship of this planet is a disgusting chapter
Brutal.
Of humanity.
It's ridiculous.
And it really is. I don't care if you're on the left or on the right. It is a ugly chapter. You talk about animals. I'm talking about, and they take care of their environment.
Right.
We pee on our environment.
Yep.
It's
yep.
disgusting.
We're worried about a gorilla, and yet we're destroying an entire fishery.
Ecosystem, exactly.
Yep, absolutely.
Let's go to buzzwords.
How about Afghanistan?
A disaster.
16 years we've been there.
I have to say trillions. And you know who said this? Osama bin Laden. He'll spend $100,000 and he'll bankrupt the United States. And guess what? He's correct.
Yep.
Yeah.
How about military parades?
I think that was a joke.
It's a horrible idea.
Let's not even treat it as like something that's rational, but let's just say we do. How are you going to get, these tanks? Who's going to transport all these tanks down
Pennsylvania Avenue?
How are you going to get all the logistics?
Yeah. $30 million for a parade.
And that's something, it's going to be a lot more than that.
Yeah.
And then who's going to clean up literally
when
these military vehicles chew up the entire street? That'll probably be the first of Trump's infrastructure programs.
Yeah.
Two more.
Okay, well, we have spring training for baseball around the corner.
I hope baseball has a comeback. One more.
Pitchers and catchers came back this week.
Yep. Chief Wahoo. We're not going to see Chief Wahoo this
Chief
year.
Wahoo's
the Cleveland
gone.
Indians have lost Chief Wahoo. They're
there
just going to go with the
gentlemen, one of the all-time great shows.
Yep.
Great guest. And we'll be back next week with another edition of The Buzz. Have a great weekend.